Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat number 66, July 29, 2010. This is Michael Loft. We have two guests, but before I get to them, we also have Mr. Ranger Joe, Mr. Joe Steinkamp, joining us this evening. He will ultimately be taking over the Tech Chats, which certainly doesn't mean that I won't be doing some in the future, and certainly we'll be doing many other accessible event presentations. But hello, Joe, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Greetings, sir. I'd like to think of it as a tag team event. You know, well, I'll just sit over here by the rope, and you tag me in, and I'll do all the high-flying moves. And then you do all the ground pound. You know, I think I'm going to stop right here with the WWE analogies because I think that says too much about my personality.
I think Joe's going to bring a different perspective to this because he was there in the AT realm and in the rehab realm when Steve Jobs came back to Apple and said, hey, we need to cut costs. Let's get rid of accessibility, and actually saw people lose their job as a result of that. No one can deny that what's being done today is great, but it wasn't always the case, and we always have to be diligent about the future. Also joining us is Robert Carter, the doctor, the tech doctor at dr-carter.com. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, you're welcome, Michael, and thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And the infamous Peter Bosley joining us tonight. Thank you, Peter. And I know Peter and Robert, our main two guests tonight, are going to, I think, clear up a lot of misconceptions brought on by the media about some negative aspects of the iPhone 4. Now, that doesn't mean that some people have had issues with the iPhone 4, but many have not. So we're going to try to separate the fact from the myth, from the hype, and sort it all out for you. And I want to start with this topic only because when I bring up iPhone 4, so many people say, no, I don't want to buy it. It's got too many problems. They believe everything they see and read in the media. So I'm going to start with Peter and let you try to explain, some have called antenna gate. What's going on here with particularly the antenna or dropped calls with the iPhone 4?
So there are a couple of different issues that have popped up with iPhone 4 and the antenna, and I'm sure everyone's heard this about 100 times. First is the way signal was calculated on the iPhone. From the very first iPhone up until the update that Apple released a couple of weeks ago, when you measure cell phone signal, there is a range of signal that is possible, and it's the range is about, you could call it a scale of maybe 100 points. The iPhone signal bars are, you know, you see 5 bars, 3 out of 5 bars, 4 out of 5 bars, only showed a very small spectrum of that range. So from point 40 all the way up to point 100, you would have 5 bars. Well, where the antenna issue comes in is there is an issue with the iPhone antenna that under certain circumstances, if you bridge the gap between the two antenna points on the lower left-hand corner of the phone with your finger, you may lose a certain number of points of your signal. And back and forth, people are debating about how much exactly that is. The visible effect is if you are in that lower range of signal, say closer to 40 points rather than 100 points, and you bridge that antenna gap, you could suddenly find yourself down to 15 points instead of 40 points, and that would manifest itself in losing 3-4 bars, you know, and people were like, wow, that's just unbelievable. Since, you know, you didn't know where your signal was to begin with, you know, you thought that was really bad. That's the first issue. The second issue is an issue of antenna design. Apple put the antenna on the outside of the phone. They did that for design reasons. They did it because they needed room inside the phone for other components, bigger battery, etc., etc. By doing so, they introduced a area where you could touch it and, without getting into too much science, interfere with the radio signal that reaches your phone. It's kind of akin to if you are listening to your radio or watching TV and you touch the antenna of your radio or touch the rabbit ears on your TV, you can cause your signal to degrade.
So, Robert, I want to hear your take being an amateur radio operator. It is a radio. It is a transmitter and a receiver. It is certainly not the only phone that's susceptible to this. Even with my iPhone 3GS, many phones have this issue. AT&T and the way that they handle calls comes into place. But I'll be curious your perspective as an amateur radio operator, how you look at this.
Well, I think Peter got it exactly right. The bottom left corner of the phone is where the feed point of the antenna is. And if you touch the feed point on any antenna, as has already been said, that will reduce the signal strength. The flip side of that coin is that antennas actually perform better when they are on the outside of a device versus on the inside of a device. So the reality of it is most people report they are able to have a signal on the iPhone 4 in places where they did not necessarily have one on the 3GS, as long as they don't touch the antenna while they're in those spots where the signal is weak. And that's where you're going to have most of the noticeable problems. If you're in a very weak signal area to start with and you reduce the signal even more, what the antenna can pick up even more by touching it, you're going to potentially lose your signal, maybe drop a call. But it's not nearly the issue that, in my opinion at least, that the media has made it out to be. Putting a case or a bumper on the phone does largely take care of the issue. If you even are in the habit of holding the phone or grabbing the phone at the bottom left with your palm, which is usually where you're going to have the problem, you can easily resolve the issue.
If you're at points 60, 70, 80, you've got very good or fair AT&T reception, and you touch that area on your phone, your calls and data and everything are still going to be fine. It's people that live on the edge of AT&T zones and they have moderate to poor coverage that are going to experience this issue. So what Apple has done to alleviate some of the issues behind this is they've expanded the dynamic range of the signal that they're showing. So now they've expanded the range quite a bit. You know, you're at point 40 on your phone and you may see, you know, 4, 3, 2 bars instead of the 5 bars that you would have originally started out with.
I heard there's some stories of people who actually had scratches that develop on the screen and had to get replacement phones. And also there was an issue with the built-in proximity sensor that I believe is going to be fixed in version 4.1. But Peter, did you not have to replace your first iPhone 4?
I'm actually on replacement number 3 right now. I know several people that have iPhone 4s, and some of them have complained to me about the proximity sensor issue, and I had that one myself. In my opinion, the proximity sensor problem is far, far, far bigger than the antenna issue, and it didn't get nearly the attention that I really would have hoped that it had. So for those of you that don't know, the proximity sensor is on the upper part of the phone, and the function is designed so that when you hold the phone up to your head, it disables the touchscreen automatically so that you're not pressing buttons with your cheek. I was hanging up on people. I was dialing numbers when I was on the phone. Functionality-wise, that was worse.
I'm curious, Peter, have you experienced that on all three of your phones? Because lots of people have experienced it, but I've only had one iPhone, and I've not seen that issue. It has not been a problem for me on my
to
phone.
Varying different degrees. Well, the latest one has been the best. It seems to be a software issue. It seems to be something that Apple has actively worked on, and the developer betas seem to function a little better on that.
One of the reasons why the thing took off so well was that there were hundreds of YouTube videos showing up everywhere, and it was easy to demonstrate the bars dramatically going down on YouTube than it was to do the proximity sensor. And of course, that's what the press ran with, is, you know, the idea that, oh my gosh, everybody's doing this. And it was on phones that made it out, you know, before their delivery date too. So by that time, the momentum swung and the snowball rolled. And I agree with you. I think the proximity sensor is a bigger issue. And it's with that, and the same as the glue with the screens, that, you know, some of the glue was not dried all the way, so that's why some people saw yellow on their screens for a little bit, and eventually that went away too. But I think at some point we need to talk about the press and how the press was a little hornswoggled.
The reality of it is we're talking about a digital signal here, and so either you have connectivity or you don't. And so one bar is just as good if it's a solid one bar at making a call as 5 bars are. It's really a binary process. The bars actually came into play 10 years ago when we had analog phones, and the bars actually meant something in an analog world. But in a digital world, not nearly so much. And I just wanted to point it out. That's one of the reasons that there's been largely hype over no real credible issue here.
This is what I'm going to bring up on the screen. It talks about the meltdown and talks about the tumultuous history between Apple and AT&T going back to 2007. And it was written by Wired magazine, and it really was kind of eye-opening. I learned some things I did not know about the communications and the blame going back and forth, and how it was kind of a marriage of convenience. And, of course, all the rumors that very soon maybe T-Mobile or Verizon will have options. But I do want to cover some other things here as well. Let's start with a few positives. One of them seems to be the battery life. Have any of you done any real-world tests where you've taken it from full to empty to kind of see how much better it is in 4 versus the 3GS.
I find that depending on how I use the phone, I get significantly better battery life. Primarily what I've found is if I leave Skype running in the background, on my particular phone, it eats up a good bit of my battery, giving me about the same battery life I had with the 3GS. If I don't have Skype running in the background, my battery, with normal usage during the day, turn my phone on about 6 o'clock in the morning. I do turn it off at night and charge it. And by the time I get home from work and in the evenings, 12, 14 hours later, I typically on the 4 find that I have about 80% battery still left after a day of normal use. And that was not the case with my 3GS. But again, that depends a lot on how much I've talked on the phone during the day, how many podcasts I've listened to, and whether or not I've left Skype running in the background.
So you haven't been a geek like me and just ran it down, you know, to 4% or until it shuts down and said, that was 72 or 96 hours. You haven't gone that far.
I have not done that.
I'm a pretty heavy user. I'm on my phone a lot. My office is not where I usually sit most of the time. I'm usually kind of running around. Fairly heavy user. I get a whole day out of it when I had the 3GS. I definitely had to charge in the middle of the afternoon to stay through the rest of the day. From 7 in the morning to when I go to sleep at night, 10, 11 o'clock, probably get down to maybe 20%. That's with being on the phone for probably 3-4 hours. The battery life is measurably better in the iPhone 4, and anyone that has had a lot of issues with the battery on the 3GS, you'll be happier with the iPhone 4, I think.
I did find that the battery life seemed to be better on the 3GS with iOS 4, which is the operating system.
Oh, much, much. And anyway, if any of you have iPhone 3GS like I do and have not upgraded, by all means do so. The battery life is much better. I get a couple days out of it. Now, granted, I work from home, so I'm not always engaging it for phone calls as much and using my VoIP system, but it is much better. I did hear that there's some kind of yellow mark or something in the upper right-hand corner that if an app is actually using location-based services, that could be one of the biggest draws on your battery.
That's true. Any of the apps that also pull for location on a regular basis, those will be indicated with an icon in the location services under the settings menu. Anything that does that on a regular basis is going to be hard on the battery. Right now, those apps are few and far between, so nothing that you really need to worry too much about. One thing I will mention is if you use GPS applications, it's probably wise to close them after you're done with them, because remember that with iOS 4, by default, everything stays open, even if it's just in a pause state.
I know in 3GS, doing some of the audio apps that I do, I hear VoiceOver stutter a bit, and I hear that maybe that issue's gone with the iPhone 4?
It's not gone totally, but what's different about the iPhone 4 is there's twice the random access memory, so you'll find that situation happen less often. If you do get real memory intensive, it's still entirely possible for you to notice some dropout on VoiceOver.
So now there are some insurance options. I saw Square Trade, you get a 2-year for your iPhone 4 for like $93. How long do you have from the time you purchase the phone? How long do you have before you engage something like that?
You have not. With Square Trade, you have 90 days.
90 days from the time you purchase the phone, okay.
Yes.
And what does that cover? I mean, what beyond, obviously, Apple's, which might be $69, but only covers a true defect in the phone.
That's correct. Square Trade will cover everything except for loss or theft.
So even if your boss threw you in the pool, maybe?
Yes, if your boss throws you in the pool, then you can have your phone fixed or they'll give you the replacement cost.
Square Trade's a lot more forgiving in their policies, it looks like.
They don't use the moisture sensor nearly as much as other companies might. So
they don't. I don't think that. I mean, they don't even use it at all, I don't think.
I want to talk about video. First, the quality of the screen, which I think Peter's going to be best to address. But then I want to talk about using FaceTime to actually have video calls with other people. And then we'll talk about Skype. And I understand Fring lets you actually have video calls over 3G, which I don't think you can do with either the quality of video calls. So let's talk about the video aspects. First, Peter, for our partials in the audience, improvements you've seen in the actual screen display.
So the iPhone 4's display is beautiful. There's really no other word for it. The detail is a lot higher. You can't pick out the individual pixels unless you put it under some kind of magnification device. For the purposes of, I would say, 90% of partially sighted people, it's not going to make that big a difference. It's hard for me to see the difference between the two screens. I can kind of, not to the point where I would really say it's a compelling feature. On the other hand...
Can you run Magnifier and VoiceOver together now? Because that was always one of the things under 3G.
No, you can't. Unfortunately, because of the gestures that they use on the Zoom side, you can't. They can't interact. That's not to say that it couldn't be done, and that's something that we may want to, as a community, talk to Apple about and say, hey, you know, we have people that would like to use magnification and voiceover at the same time. So send an email to accessibility@apple.com if you're interested in that, and hopefully they'll take your request to heart.
So let's talk about the video call aspect, because even those of us who are blind, certainly we don't live in a vacuum. We have sighted friends and family. So the concept of the ability to make video calls and actually speak with others, or maybe even have them read something or help us find something, or, you know, I'm just curious, so, what have you done between FaceTime, Skype, or Fring?
So the iPhone 4 has a front-facing camera on it. It's the first iPhone that has that. The camera that's on the front of the device is a VGA camera, so the quality is not great. However, if you have friends or family members that have the iPhone 4 and you want to talk to them face-to-face or they'd like to see you, you can definitely FaceTime call them, and those features are fully accessible with VoiceOver. It's kind of neat. It works over Wi-Fi. They're planning on making it come to 3G eventually, but right now cellular providers are not ready for that. You can also switch the view to the higher quality back camera if you wanted to show something to the person that you're chatting with or wanted them to, like Michael said, maybe read something for you. Everything's integrated. You open up a contact and there's a little FaceTime icon at the bottom, and you just say FaceTime, and it asks you which number to FaceTime call them, and then it'll send them a little request asking them to accept your call or reject it or similar things like that.
I like the idea of Salona reading for people. Wouldn't that be interesting? Instead of capture, you just hold your phone up, hey, what does this say? And somebody reads it to you.
With the iPhone 4, the camera that's in the iPhone 4 is far more sensitive than the one that was in the 3GS. Not just in megapixels. It's a 5.1 megapixel camera, but the density is a little higher. And there is now an LED flash, which brings some interesting possibilities to the forefront. There are a couple OCR apps kind of floating around out there. Nothing super solid yet, but if this guy was a betting man, he'd say that those are coming.
Have any of you done A-B comparisons of scanning between the 3GS and the 4? Have we seen real-world improvements scanning RFID tags or actual OCR?
I had a 3GS and an iPhone 4 at the same time for a little while, and I did that SayText app that many of you have probably heard about was around, and I tried them both, and the iPhone 4 definitely performed better. Now, that having been said, the particular way in which SayText functions is a little odd, so you can get some inconsistent results even with the same device.
Well, we'll talk about in a few minutes what Serotek will be bringing to the iPhone world, so we'll hit that in a little bit. But I want to talk about Skype, and I've done some audio testing with it with 3G. It sounds good. And what I've been impressed with is, like I said, A, that it holds up on 3G, which is pretty nice. I'm able to talk to people while they were driving. Obviously, you're not going to be able to drive forever and ultimately lose your connection. But I'm curious about the video aspect of it.
There's no video chat implemented in Skype.
Fring, have you played with that? They claim it does video and over 3G.
It does between two Fring clients. Skype and Fring had a falling out, so the access to Skype from Fring is now gone. So to answer your question, I don't know how the Fring implementation works because I don't know anyone that uses Fring.
The audio quality in Skype is really good, and of course, one problem I saw is that if you did terminate the call, it doesn't hand the sound back to the speaker. It stays in the earpiece. Now, Robert hasn't had this because he's using the earbuds with the built-in microphone on the cord.
It does sometimes hand the audio back. It's inconsistent. Sometimes it will and sometimes it won't, but yeah, I've definitely seen that one. You know, in that case, you've got to open up the app switcher and kill it.
The battery's still not good enough for you. There are at least two options. MoFi has a new battery pack for the 4, and I think someone else does as well. I saw that over at a good site to check out, by the way, todayinios.com. It's a blog, and I have a podcast and even an app called TII, and a lot of good stuff over there if you really want to follow the progress of the iPhone.
Yeah, that's a very good site and podcast, and the guy's a little bit loves Apple, but he's willing to really give them a hard time when he feels like they haven't done what they should have done, and kind of refreshing, actually.
Now, do any of you know anything about this camera connect kit?
I have one. What it is a thing that plugs into your dock connector and lets you download from a digital camera if you have the right connections or certain peripherals. Some keyboards, USB keyboards, will work with it.
And microphones.
Not all, though, so it's kind of trial and error. Unless you know somebody that actually knows something that has worked, you're kind of at the whim of the Apple gods there.
I'm going to assume that it's certainly not an option for any USB Braille displays at this point.
No, USB Braille displays.
So basically, it's just two little pieces. You just got the USB connector and then something for an SD card or something like that?
Some SD card readers will work with it. It's basically just a little prong that has a USB cord on the end of it, and the other end goes into the iPhone. There's also some places that have made special adapters for the USB thing to plug directly into the cameras. It's worth researching. The Apple's got a page up that gives some more details on the camera connection kit, and it's worth looking at that.
People who buy a new iPhone 4 get a free bumper or one of six cases, right? Or those who already purchased one can get a refund or something, but there is an actual app that you download?
That's correct. It's called Case Program. Keep in mind that you need to order your case within 30 days of your iPhone purchase.
Okay, so they'll end, you might have to wait a while. They're saying September, October, because obviously there's probably quite a few orders are running through there. Yep. But you being able to see them, is there any benefit to any of the six cases look maybe as a nicer alternative to the actual bumper that runs around the perimeter of the phone, the outside of the phone?
They've got several options. Offhand, I don't really recall. There's quite a few different little styles. So there's one that's like a flip front case. The descriptions are actually pretty good. So and the app is accessible. So if you've purchased an iPhone 4 and you haven't downloaded the app, go and grab it, look through the descriptions, and they're all pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, I've heard some people say that they felt that Apple was making a mistake by having you have to download an app. People didn't want to mess with that to get a case. But actually, I found the app is totally accessible, and honestly, it's easier to download the app and get the case than it would be to go on the Apple Store and find a case and get one that way. So,
if you don't want to download the app to get a free case, and if that's too much trouble for you, then just don't do it.
$29. Why not? If you can get a case, nothing probably like the OtterBox, but...
For my money, the real beauty of the iPhone, in many respects, is the apps. And they're easy to download. They automatically install. If you're interested in the iPhone, grow accustomed quickly to installing apps, because that's when you're going to really get the full benefit out of it.
The idea here is that it's no fuss, no muss. They are coming up with a great way of handling this. I wasn't thrilled with the way Steve had approached it in the press conference. The rest of the team has certainly stepped up to try to make this as painless for people as possible. So it's better than getting an appointment to come in and get your case. How's that?
I agree with you on that. And for anyone that isn't inducted into the iOS device paradigm, these apps aren't window dressing anymore, folks. I don't spend hardly ever any time in the web browser in iOS. Everything I do is an app. It's worth mentioning because sometimes as geeks and tech people, we forget, you know, the iPhone might be their first phone where an app actually does something.
If you don't plan on getting apps for it and bowing down to using iTunes to do that, of course you can also buy the apps through the phone itself, but that is a part of it and that is the magic of it. That's why it excels is all of the third-party apps that you plug into it. I want to talk, I brought up a link here talking about different ways to sell your iPhone. You said you got rid of your 3GS and there were two links I have here. One talking about new uses for your existing 3GS if you want to hold on to it, but you got rid of yours. Which method did you use or what are some of the options you know for people? And so it might be that you get most of your money back. And some have done it even on eBay and got a little higher.
Price. Well, I got $300. That's not too bad.
So basically you didn't lose anything on the proposition.
Oh, I lost. I ended up having to pay the early upgrade price when I got my iPhone 4 because I wasn't eligible for the discount.
It talks about some other uses for it. And one of which may be, of course, folks, you can pop out your SIM card and simply use it as a touch and just use the apps that are on it and use it on your Wi-Fi connection. Or certainly someone could use it without a contractual agreement as long as they're willing to use AT&T as their provider.
I sold mine also to a coworker, but I was walking down the hall and I just happened to mention, I think I might sell my iPhone 3GS because I've got the iPhone 4, and a woman came running out of her office and said, I'll buy it. It took about 5 minutes to make the deal, and sold it for $225, and I was satisfied with that because for some unknown reason, I was one of the people, I got my 3GS last September, but yet I was one of the people who was offered the opportunity to upgrade for just, the regular price.
Yeah, I wondered why... You know, with the iPhone 4, why would someone want the 3GS? But one of the things that now intrigues me that the U.S. Library of Congress got involved and said, yes, you may jailbreak your phone and, install some other apps. Apple cannot have exclusivity where that's concerned. So that got me thinking, well, geez, if I go to iPhone 4, you're taking my 3GS and jailbreaking it just to kind of utility uses.
I'm surprised that people are making such a big deal out of that because, okay, so it's legal to jailbreak your phone.
But you void the warranty.
It didn't stop anybody when they wanted to jailbreak it anyway, so it's like, it's legal, whoopty.
There probably are people that were stopped by that. And of course, our concern would be, voiceover or accessibility.
Most of the stuff that you'll find in the jailbreak app store are not voiceover accessible because they were not built using the Cocoa tools that Apple provides.
And that's what I was thinking as well. I think I tweeted this the other day where I said, okay, well, we won one with the DRM on eBooks, but we lost one with accessibility with jailbroken iPhones, because that is exactly what you're when you're going to get into this system, you're agreeing to the limits of control, of hardware control, software control, and, you know, for the user experience, because that's what Apple excels at. When you're going to purchase a phone like this, you're going to get some commitments, like with the tools that you've talked about. You know, when you go to do something that is not a part of the Apple terms of service, and that's a really boring document. I haven't read it all, but I've read a good bit of it. You know, one of the things you're doing is you're throwing yourself open to more security issues. You're throwing yourself open to lack of voiceover app accessibility. And you're also, you know, doing something that sounds really cool, but there's a lot of articles out there on Lifehacker that give you an idea of why to do it, and then there's a lot of great articles out there that tell you why not to do it. You can reset in some cases, but there is the term iBrick.
It's very interesting for a lot of those of us who are visually impaired or blind to move, say, from the Symbian operating system or perhaps the Windows Mobile system into the Apple system. And a lot of people find it pretty daunting at first because unlike some of the other operating systems where you can just plug your phone into your computer and have it show up as a drive, and then you can simply go to Windows Explorer and copy files onto that phone. With the Apple system, it's more of a closed system, which you have to input and output into your phone through iTunes. It's a new skill set, a new way of doing things for people to learn, and people can become pretty frustrated by that. But in reality, once you learn it and actually begin to use it, it all works pretty well.
Apple has done a great job with VoiceOver. Apple's done some great things with accessibility. That having been said, I personally would really like to see Google step up to the plate and really compete with Apple on that front. Make Android as accessible as iOS is. Here's why. Not everyone is going to be happy with the hardware choices Apple has made. Some people really just don't want a phone without a physical keyboard. Other people don't like AT&T. I am actually one of the people that doesn't really like AT&T, and it's a testament to how much I love the iPhone that I'm willing to put up with all their crap to keep the iPhone.
Well, for some people, it's not an option. They live in an area where AT&T does not serve.
Right. So,
well,
you know,
I'm Verizon, so I'm right. Out.
Google. Yeah, I'm in very much in agreement that with this point that I would love to see Google step up to the accessibility challenge, but I would say at this point that they have not done so.
I agree with you, but it doesn't hurt us to continue to try to educate them and say, look, we will buy these phones. There will be people that will buy your phone if you make it accessible. Microsoft with Windows Phone 7. It's appalling to me that they have basically said, we're not interested in making our first versions of Windows Phone 7 accessible because it's too hard. We're too busy implementing all the features for the sighted people.
There's a real danger here. We're really looking at being shoved down a cattle chute here. With the fragmentation on other platforms, if there's no accessibility available for Symbian because it's going away or whatever this week, there is nothing in Windows Mobile, Android is hit or miss at the moment, then we're kind of forced down this narrow salvo of going through iPhone. The problem with that is that it's very limiting in the vocational world. For those of you who are, you know, trying to become managers, that's pretty much a BlackBerry world. And if yep. you're one phone or two phones that can't run in a ratio, then you're kind of stuck. That means you're going to be hitting your head against a glass ceiling. And the other side of this too is that we're letting Apple then dictate what accessibility is. And that mm-hmm. is a concern to me as well, because we don't want it to be one side. We're getting away from monopolies and Windows. Why do we want to turn around and do the exact same thing for Apple? So the knife cuts both ways, and I'm kind yep. of concerned.
For anyone out there that thinks that we're being a little crazy here, Apple's done a great job, and I'll be the first to stand up and commend them for what they're doing here. But it's time for these other companies to follow suit. It's time for Microsoft to integrate accessibility on the front end of their product design. It's time for Google to say, we need to be proactive on this front too.
Right, and I don't want it to be said that I'm telling nobody to buy the iPhone. That's far from it, because that may be your only choice, you know?
No, we need accessibility. I mean, think what a great day it'll be. We have accessibility to the top two mainstream technologies, and we're not paying more for the ability to do that. What a great day that would be. So we certainly need to keep advocating and lobbying and do what we have to do to get Google and even the hardware manufacturers to see the light and make this happen.
Let's open it up for questions.
Yeah, I'm going to open up for questions. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to talk briefly about what Serotech is bringing to the party. We've got three things. Of course, there's one already out there. It's called iBlink Radio. So if you haven't got it yet, just search for iBlink. And it's an application allowing you to listen to radio stations owned by or run by the blind. Also radio reading services and podcasts. But also coming up, and we have about 12 people now, I think, beta testing it, and that's SamNet for the iPhone. And there may be some other, we're planning for some other phones as well. I'm not going to give you an exact list because there's a lot of variables that come into play there. But I can assure you it is happening, and I have been given authority to actually give you at least a time frame of Q4 of this year. That's right, the last quarter of the year, October, November, December, hopefully the earlier part, but we'll put it out when it's ready, as always. But it is a viable product. It is not vaporware. We are working on it. We want to make sure that it fully functions. We've got a great, great beta team, each putting in their 2 cents, so we got about a quarter's worth of knowledge there, but it's really good stuff, and I'm very excited about that. But also, we're working on DocuScan Plus. It'll be an upgrade, not only for Windows, but also in bring it over to the phones, giving you a viable technology for scanning documents on the go. So when you're out at a restaurant or in a hotel or just someplace where it's not convenient to carry around a laptop or even a netbook along with a big scanner, here you go. And maybe even with certain cameras, so you can take your phone and get the picture and get the document that you need. So all of that coming up for you here in Q4 of this year. Or actually, I will go ahead and take this question. What type of Bluetooth Braille displays are supported in iOS 4? For example, the Braille Connect. And there is a webpage, which I didn't put on here, but I should and I will.
Go to apple.com/accessibility and find it from there.
Exactly. There you go. So apple.com/accessibility.
There's a link at the top of that page that takes you to the iPhone section. And then under there should be a heading that says Braille.
So I think it's about 30, right? And I know there are a few, and I don't know them in particular. They're having some issues, and they're working, the manufacturers are working with Apple to try to resolve the issues.
I tried a Braille display with the APH refresher Braille, and it worked really great with the iPhone. But unfortunately, with Braille Sense Plus that I have, it doesn't connect at this point, but they're working on it.
Now, there are people like Mike Calvo that are holding out the rumor of the iPod Touch, complete with a front-facing camera. So
he says he's holding out. I don't really believe that. We'll see what happens.
It won't be much longer. It'll be September. I mean, if all goes according to the tea leaves, it'll be September. But
if not
you
by
know,
Q4, he'll have an iPhone 4 probably, right?
He's good with that iPad. That made me want to get one.
Well, I was pretty impressed with the iPad. I saw his, although I don't want to call it tainted, but certainly was altered with the Salona, which in one sense was kind of neat that I could quickly see where the QWERTY, where the keys were. But by the other sense, I wanted to feel it pre-overlay and get a better feel for it.
So, oh, he's got one of those screen.
Yeah, screen protectors on the front with Braille, which was kind of weird to me. But
they came by the booth in NFB and demonstrated it for us, and Mike got it right then and there and then fell in love with it. I think that is a really neat situation because he has it for the iPhone as well. So go over to Salona.com to take a look at those transparencies because they're pretty inexpensive. And for those who are looking for some tactile implementation on that phone, it's not a bad alternative, and it sticks to it pretty well.
You know, for those of you who do have the iPad, we are coming out with a version of iBlink Radio that will take advantage of the larger real estate. And there's a lot of people who enjoy reading stories to their kids in real time and, you know, listening to the speech and turning the pages along. And so for a lot of parents and folks with different applications, it's been kind of a family tool, or they watch programs together and enjoy the high quality video. And I was kind of debating the... Okay, Tom Schill, I'm going to acknowledge you. Go ahead, sir.
With... what's being done or not done with Windows, where does that leave screen readers like Mobile Speak and Talks in the mix these days?
Well, of course, Symbian is still large on an international level, and of course, you already see Mobile Speak put their efforts on the Symbian side, because even if you have an existing, you know, Windows mobile phone 6.5 or 6.3 or whatever version, you know, if 7's not going to be doable...
You know, Windows Mobile in its current incarnation is basically dead. They've killed it. Does that mean that there won't be opportunities for Code Factory to make Mobile Speak work with Windows Phone 7 at some point? No, and I think that will eventually happen. In my opinion, a short-sighted and somewhat bad move for Microsoft to say, hey, we can't fit in letting anybody make accessibility software for Windows Phone 7, so we'll just wait till the next generation of devices roll around.
Right, and we get into that fragmentation effect of if everybody goes to the iPhone, then there is no market for Code Factory, which is even scarier for those who are relying on that. And as we go further and further away from Windows 6.5, Windows Mobile 6.5, 6.1, when your handset is dead, then you're having to look at upgrading to a phone that may or may not be inaccessible. And, you know, for some of us, again, I'm with Verizon. When my HTC brick, as I love to call it, goes dead, I've got to look at something that's in Android in order for me to go forward. So in a lot of situations, this is going to be kind of a big argument going forward.
I'm surprised you haven't heard more from Code Factory on this front. You know, they could have, I think that they should have raised stink about this. They've done excellent work with Windows Mobile. They invest a significant amount of time and resources into making Windows Mobile devices accessible. And while I would like to see Microsoft build in accessibility like Apple has done, in the meantime, they shouldn't block good people like Code Factory from...
And coming up with AT&T now being the premier provider for Windows Mobile 7, you know, that's going to be a really interesting thing going forward to see how that takes space in the iPhone era of AT&T and where they're positioned in the stores, how much promotion is given to it. And at the same time, Windows Mobile 7 has a lot of gaming features to it. The Xbox is going to connect to it. There's a lot of visual aspects to it that I'm not really sure how it would work anyway. And to be honest, Windows Mobile has a great track record of just taking the world by storm. So it remains to be seen. So I kind of get, you know, business-wise, why some people are taking a wait-and-see attitude. But this does get back to accessibility by design rather than, you know, it's that bolt-on, built-in philosophy.
Do any of us know, or any of you know, maybe some of the enhancements we'll see in the forthcoming 4.1, iOS 4.1?
There's supposed to be a fix for proximity sensor issues. Other than that, there really hasn't been a lot that anyone has really found out about.
Now, what about this? It says Apple issues iOS 4 fix for Exchange issues. And I know you use Exchange, Peter. What did they do?
There was an issue with certain versions of Microsoft Exchange and the timeouts that were necessary for them to communicate with devices, and certain server configurations would cause the phone not to sync properly or take forever to sync. That effect would propagate to the server side because the server side would keep trying to talk to the device and the device would have given up by then. So there were some issues with that. And so Apple basically made a few changes to the way Exchange accounts work in iOS and kind of extended the grace period a little bit. And that seems to have caused the hubbub to die down about that particular problem. It wasn't one that 90% of these consumers would have seen.
Tips about using iTunes on more than one machine, because it kind of burnt me. I was out in Phoenix and there was a new Navigon. And I thought, okay.
Don't try.
I had copies of all the apps. I thought this should be cake. All I got to do is go get the new Navigon, but it deleted everything off the phone. And when I got home, I had to restore the phone to factory defaults and then reload. And then I had to recreate the categories. And that's one of my favorite features, by the way, of iOS 4 is those folders. And
I'm gonna harp on Apple again on this. Google's got you beat, Apple, on the cloud functionality by far. You can only sync with one iTunes library at a time. And there's really, unless you're willing to do a lot of manual work, nothing else you can do about that. Time to give up on the Mac being the center of the universe, Apple, and embrace cloud computing.
Well, exactly. Why give me five machines when I really can't make the phone work between all five machines? Why bother? What is the point other than for me to buy stuff from you? I mean, you know, when I'm out in the
field. That's the point, to buy stuff from you.
So getting back to the question at hand, Pete, worth it, right? It's totally worth it. It's totally need to have, if you're a 3GS guy, when you're ready, it's time to jump to 4, or is this something that you say waits till 4.1?
If you've got a 3GS already and you're fairly happy with 3GS, I would actually recommend waiting until the next version of the iPhone, unless something that we've discussed is a cornerstone that you really need, unless the enhanced battery life is worth it to you, unless, you know, you have friends and family that want to be able to FaceTime talk with you, unless you need the enhanced camera functionality when these OCR apps hit the market and things start to firm up there. Unless those things are really important to you, you know, the 3GS still has life in it. Don't go out and buy something just because it's available.
Now, ask
Robert. I agree that there's nothing wrong at all with hanging on to your 3GS if that's what you want to do, but I want to add a couple more reasons that I would prefer the iPhone 4. Number one, I find the audio that comes out of the iPhone 4 to be a good bit cleaner and better sounding than what I got from my particular 3GS. I'm more comfortable listening to podcasts. I listen to them at double speed or listening to audio through just the speaker of the phone itself. I don't need necessarily to plug in additional speakers or headphones all the time. And with 3GS, it always sounded just a little bit too unclear to me to really want to do that very often. I can walk around my office with leave my 4 lying on my desk and hear the audio just fine throughout the room, and I like that a lot. Number two, the iPhone 4 has the same processor that the iPad has, and it has double the RAM of the 3GS, and so VoiceOver is just going to function better and be more responsive and stutter much less and be more pleasant to work with. For those reasons alone, for me at least, as well as some of the things we've mentioned, but it's really worth upgrading, or was to me worth upgrading to the iPhone 4.
Now, what I will say for anybody that does not have an iPhone, and this is the device you're coming in on, and you're thinking about saving yourself the $50 or $100 to get the 3GS, don't do it. Spend the extra money up front and get the phone that's current now, because what's going to happen is next year, there will be a new device next year. So buying a 3GS, which was what was out in 2009 last year, really just is not something that I would advise.
In our final few minutes, you guys have any new apps that have blown you away? I just downloaded one. I haven't played with it, installed it, called Podcaster. And two things that intrigued me about it was, A, the ability to import an OPML, a list of all of your existing podcasts, and automatically subscribe to them. But also, I understand you can speed up the playback.
Well, I've been playing with Podcaster, and it's very nice. It used to be called RSS. I think it's easy enough to see how to import files, and although I haven't done one, but I looked through the options, and it didn't seem like it would be too difficult.
Anything else new and cool? What about Netflix? That hasn't come out for the iPhone yet, has it?
There's some accessibility issues.
I didn't know there was out. My wife's really been waiting for
it. It's not out yet. Zany Touch game.
Yeah, we did a demo of that on a podcast, and the other one, what is it, Aurorify? How do you say that? That a lot of people are very excited about, because it is a very stimulating game, and I guess we need to, I think Liam's Land, they had a podcast covering that, but maybe we'll talk about that on the podcast or something.
I'll talk a little bit about Zany Touch, too. Those of you that have Zany Touch set up to your Twitter account, and I'm not going to mention any names, but it gets a little too verbose when you put your score out there every time.
Yeah, if you did it once to see if it works, fine, but turn it off. No one cares. And that gets another four squared argument. We'll save that for another
four square.
We'll talk about the social networking.
No. If I retweet this, I get something free.
Deals Plus.
We're down to our final minute. Any final quick comments before we wrap up Tech Chat 66? I want to thank you, Joe, for joining us, and look forward to kind of seeing what direction you take the Tech Chats. And of course, I'll be working with Joe. It's not like I'm going to hand him the keys and go, there you go, buddy. Good seeing you. We'll be working together and trying to make it informational as possible.
Yeah, folks, if you have questions on these ahead of time, questions that you'd like Michael to bring in, email resources at sarahtalk.com ahead of time, because we're just out here gabbing. We'd like to engage the community as much as possible and make sure that we're really giving you guys the information that you want.
And you can also leave a comment on the Sarah Talk blog at sarahtalk.com, and that's a good way of getting a hold of us as well. We also have the Blab line, Michael, don't we?
That's right, 866-997-BLAB. That's 866-997-2522. Concludes another Tech Chat, this one being number 66, technology made possible by Serotech and their accessible event technology. Check it out. You need to make your meetings, webinars, and corporate events or classes accessible. Check it out at www.accessibleevent.com. Learn more about all products and services created by Serotech at www.serotech.com. Visit the podcast, where you can get archives of the Tech Chats and our biweekly podcast, at www.serotalk.com. And of course, you can follow us at twitter.com/Serotalk. Thank you, Robert Carter and Pete Bosley and Mr. Joe Steinkamp. This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.